At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste, like juicy heirloom tomatoes, cheesy house-made pizza, and fresh artisan-made bread. From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, we are back. Hour number two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We continue to roll on. Going to open up the mic once again with Shay Raftus, our very own producer at SB Nation. Very exciting show, Shay, because we've talked a lot about the Big 12 Conference and the SEC with college football upon us. But I know you're a Big 10 guy, very proud Ohio State Buckeye. What are some of the biggest storylines going on with this program?
Well, they're bringing in a new quarterback with Dwayne Haskins. JT Barrett was a starter there for like 3 or 4 years. And now it's kind of a new era. Urban Meyer has said Dwayne Haskins' arm talent is one of the best he's ever recruited since he's been coaching college football. And that's high praise for a guy who recruited Tim Tebow, Cam Newton, Cardale Jones, and a bunch of guys like Braxton Miller as well. So new quarterback, but I think this is Ohio State's best opportunity with the way the schedule is set up and the recruiting classes they brought in. I think this is their best chance to win a national championship since the 2014 and 2015 seasons.
Okay, Shay, they were, what, 11-2 last year, and they got the snub from the selection committee. They've got to be highly motivated. I mean, this is, what, 2018? Is this going to be their year?
I think this is their best opportunity. Now, the Big Ten is very tough. Michigan, I think, is going to have a bounce back here with all the pieces they returned on defense, plus Shea Patterson, the Ole Miss transfer, coming in. You've got a Wisconsin and Michigan State are both veteran-laden teams. And don't forget about Penn State, who's quietly become a really good program there. And they still have the best quarterback in the conference returning in Trace McSorley. So the Big Ten is loaded, and it'll be a tough road. And they've got that early game against TCU, the third Saturday of the football season. But I think Ohio State is the most talented team in that conference, and I expect them to come out of there at some point and make the playoff. Whether they win a national championship is up for debate. It's not going to be easy, but I like their chances this year, and I like the talent they have.
How does the Big Ten Conference stack up against the Big 12? We've been talking about the Big 12 and the SEC Conference. Where are they?
I mean, the Big Ten is very high. I mean, it wasn't too long ago. The Big Ten was kind of the laughingstock of college football. They had some really rough moments. But ever since Ohio State won that national championship and the coaching infusion, when you talk about Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh, James Franklin, Mark D'Antonio, Paul Christ, even guys like Pat Fitzgerald, the Big Ten coaching has just gone up a whole other level. And that, with that has come the recruiting. So I think it competes with not only the Big 12, but even conferences like the SEC and the ACC. It's up there with all the rest of the top conferences in the country.
Okay, the countdown is on for the 2018, the start of the college football season. So excited because Shay Raftus, our very own producer at SB Nation Radio, he's going to be hanging out with the Big E, providing some great insight and commentary. You stick around. We've got a lot of great interviews coming your way here in Hour 2, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back to the next generation of sports radio, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are ready to recap 2018 World Cup and the expectations. It was just incredible. It certainly captured the world's attention. So many upsets and disappointments, but ultimately it was France that came out on top and crowned the world champ. Delighted to have with us tonight from DraftKings, he is their World Cup soccer analyst, and that is Jordan Cooper, here to talk about a month long of so many shocking upsets, and it was so exciting. Good evening, Jordan. Nice to have you on the program for the first time.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
All right, so you've had some time to reflect on how the World Cup ultimately played out with France's 4-2 win over Croatia. What was the highlight for you, and what do you love the most about World Cup soccer?
What I hate the most about World Cup soccer is when it's over. It feels like there's almost like no sports going on, even with the Major League All-Star break.
Yeah.
But for soccer, at least, within 5 days, you already have the preseason club friendlies. Mm-hmm. So I get to take a little, like, one-week vacation from soccer.
Yeah.
And then it's just all, like, the 51 weeks of the year and just back in the saddle. But the World Cup, to me, I mean, I think the most exciting aspect of the whole World Cup was the late goals, the amount of goals. I know there were an inordinate amount of own goals, but there was only one 0-0 game, the Denmark-France game. So typically, World Cups, especially in this country, although the United States weren't in them, it's still a very popular event, and it gets a lot of casual, even casual sports fans, even if they're not just casual people in general, to actually witness what I consider to be one of, if not the most exciting sport in the world. So to see all the drama and the late goals and the limited amount of boring games, I think was a benefit, and I enjoy, you know, being on Twitter and seeing other sports fans that typically look at me at soccer and go, well, that's a pretty boring sport, while they're sitting drinking a beer watching a 4.5 hour baseball game.
Right. Hey, Jordan Cooper with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is DraftKings World Cup soccer analyst, and he was recalling some of his favorite moments. But really, there was just so many inspirational storylines. You know, when you compare this World Cup 2018 to ones in the past, how is it different? We're talking about it kept you on the edge of your seat, right?
Well, I think actually the biggest difference is from a technological standpoint. I mean, this is the first use of video-assisted referee.
Okay.
And you saw, look how many penalties were awarded based on, in the past, it would have been such a bang-bang play for the referee that unless he could see clear and obvious in real time with his own eyes, it typically wouldn't be called. And we had a lot of those calls go up to the video replay booth, you know, get sent down to his little earpiece, and then all of us watching at home are looking, going, yeah, if the referee looks at this, this is going to be a penalty. So I think the biggest change in this World Cup is the more amount of, quote, correct calls. And I'm using the term quotes because from a soccer fan's perspective, we're kind of used to the, that could have been a handball in the box. Mm-hmm. It's not, is it obvious? Is it clear? I could understand if it's called, those types of plays, like, that no longer exists. I mean, we see that in the NBA where seemingly like 8 times throughout the game, they have to stop to look at the monitor for as something as like a throw-in even. So it didn't slow down the game, though. I thought they used it very well during the World Cup, but obviously in comparison to the previous ones, this is the first one where there weren't as many cries of, you know, like Diego Maradona.
Okay.
The handball goal, like that would not have happened this year, and we may not see those types of plays going forward ever again in the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Jordan, you know, you had mentioned just a moment ago talking about the U.S. National team. For the first time in more than, 3 decades, they did not compete in the World Cup, and they failed to qualify. So break that down, that aspect for us, in order of, you know, what happened. I mean, it was stunning.
How many things can I point out? I mean, how much time do you have?
Okay.
Why we didn't qualify for this year's World Cup?
Who is to blame?
That we can take is that everyone. I mean, that's what I like to do. Let's start the list down the names. But I mean, we have a young team now, the U.S. men's national team. CONCACAF is not necessarily the toughest of regions, so I think that even our young players, with given 4 years' experience, and two gold cups thrown in the middle, shouldn't have, I mean, we would have said this before anyway, we shouldn't have a problem qualifying for 2022 mm-hmm. in Qatar. But at least we're going to qualify in 2026 as we're hosting. Mm-hmm. So we can look forward to that, at least, from a kind of cynical perspective.
Hey, just a few more minutes tonight at SB Nation Radio with Jordan Cooper, DraftKings World Cup soccer analyst. And Jordan, reach out and connect with our audience tonight. Where can they find you on Twitter? You had mentioned it.
Yes, I'm at BlenderHD on Twitter, and feel free to complain about anything soccer-related, especially in the Premier League during
okay.
the season.
Uh-huh. All right, so let's shine the spotlight. Let's talk about France and Croatia. What a remarkable journey between both of these teams and the path and how they got there. Let's start with Croatia. I mean, so many of those games, to come from behind and to win. Your impression of their road to the finals?
Well, I think their road to the finals obviously was much easier because Russia knocked out Spain. But Croatia's midfield, if you looked at the whole tournament, I would think that Croatia's midfield may be the first, if not second, best midfield of any of the teams. It's just that guys like Ivan Rakitic and Luka Modric and Brozovic, they don't necessarily play in the Premier League, but I mean, some people would say that La Liga and Serie A are actually better leagues, so they may not be the more household names that you see. So when people were describing them as quote, Cinderella stories. Mm-hmm. It was kind of laughable, although I was down on them during the knockout rounds, game after game, going, well, they all just played 120. They're going to be tired the next game. And then they'd win the next game. And then I'd be like, well, they just played 120 again. And then they'd win the next game. But, I mean, I think it's finally caught up with them in the final. Because, I mean, France's midfield, I would put at the same level as Croatia. And at some point, you know, your legs are going to give out playing nearly an extra match over another opponent that has the talent on the field as much as you do.
Okay, well, let's talk about the talent on the field. And that, of course, is France. They received a hero's welcome after winning the World Cup. They are champions for the second time. And when you think of this team, I mean, did it all just come down to defense and their ability to close out opponents?
I actually, well, that's absolutely true. The France did not mind winning in whatever way they could see fit. And they were criticized a little bit for it. I think it was a little unjust. I think really the story of France, I'm a very cynical soccer person, is that Didier Deschamps, their head coach, really had no system. Like, throughout all of qualifying, his main criticism was, like, how do you play Pogba and Griezmann together? And he would go through all these different cockamamie formations. Some of them worked. Some of them were horrible. They had Blaise Matuidi playing as a winger when he's really a defensive midfielder. And then now it's a lopsided formation. So there are a lot of people in the French media, a lot of soccer media, that were not necessarily looking at this guy going, like, he's the best players. If you look at their roster, the players that they've left behind could beat half the teams in the World Cup. It's just a matter of, can he put together a system that generates wins and gets the most out of the talent of his players? And he managed to do so, even putting Pogba in a role that, yes, we saw him shine with a goal in the final, but for the most part, he played as a holding, glued the team together type of midfielder. That it's very similar to how he plays for Manchester United, but not as much as what a lot of French fans wanted to see, the more dynamic attacking Pogba that they may have saw for Juventus when he played there.
Well, it was a thrilling, it was an unpredictable 2018 World Cup. What a true pleasure to have on the program for the very first time. Jordan Cooper, he gave a shout out. That's right, follow him on Twitter, at BlenderHD, DraftKings World Cup soccer analyst. First time on the program. Thanks, Jordan. You were fantastic.
Well, thanks for having me on.
You bet. Much more coming your way. The fastest 2 hours in radio. That is the Big E Sports Show at SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. I'm Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Connect with us many different ways. We make it so easy. You can join us on Twitter, at eRadioSports, podcastarena.com, and you can email the show at info@eRadioSports.com. As promised, it is time to go inside the ropes for our weekly PGA news and notes with former PGA pro and author, and that is Larry Miller. He's going to give you all the skinny on the 2018 Open Championship. Good evening, Larry.
Hey, good evening, Alyssa, and also to your golfing audience out there.
It's good to have you on. Of course, the world's best golfers, they are in Scotland this week for the 147th Open Championship. Jordan Spieth, he is the defending champion at Carnoustie Golf Links. And Agnes, so we want to talk about the Open. It's certainly fast and it's firm. But with Jordan Spieth coming into this event, didn't do too bad on day one. He is the defending champion, but really overall in 2018, he has been battling some inconsistent results. Analyze his game. What has he shown you?
Well, I think for one thing, his short game, you know, especially putting, has not been as stellar as it usually is. He's been battling that for a while now. He keeps saying he has it worked out, and he's made some changes, and he's close. You know, of course, we've heard Tiger say that for years now that I'm
mm-hmm.
close.
Yeah.
But he does seem to be, you know, he seems to be rolling the ball better now, especially this week, and I think maybe he's got a handle on that. His ball striking, though, has been pretty suspect. In the first round yesterday, you know, he had trouble finding any fairway. He was hitting it right, left, military golf, kind of.
Yeah.
And he was getting himself in that high grass, and so it contributed to his one-over-par score. But I just think he's been, you know, he's making changes. And any time you're doing that, you're going to be inconsistent until you get it really dialed in. And so I think that's been his problem, is that he's trying to make positive changes, but it doesn't show up in results for a while.
You know, Larry, you mentioned the struggles that he has had with his putter this year. In fact, he's ranked 177th. Why does he struggle, though, on short putts? I mean, the longer the lag putts he seems to be successful at, but it's those shorter putts that he's having some difficulty with.
Well, that starts to become an issue in the mind when you start having trouble with short putts. It's not so much mechanics. It gets in your head, and you get that little bit of confidence. What happens is that when your confidence starts eroding a little bit, it begins to eat away at your actual mechanics. And so you start getting a little bit jerky with the stroke, not as smooth. And that's what happens, is that you lose the smoothness and the rhythm of the stroke. And you start, you know, typically what happens when you start missing short putts, two things. When a good player misses a short putt, it's one of two things almost every time. Either the head moves just a little bit, and when you do that, the blade of the putter changes position.
Okay.
Or you take the putter back too short and then try to catch up and accelerate the putter all of a sudden instead of a nice pendulum. You know, you want to think of like a grandfather clock and just a nice pendulum stroke with a good rhythm backward and forward. And you know, a good putters, they take the putter back just as far as it goes forward. It's an even stroke. But when you see a guy struggling, he's taking it back too short, trying to catch up and jab it. And he's doing some of that. He's doing some of the head movement. You know, when Steve Stricker straightened out Tiger's putting a few years ago, what he told him was to don't let the bill of your cap or your visor move, you know, because kind of in your, when you're looking down in your peripheral vision, you can kind of see the tip of your cap, and you don't let that move. Well, what that does, if you do that, then your chin and your head's not going to move, mm-hmm. and you're not going to reroute the angle of that putter face. So it's those two things usually, and I think it's been a little bit of both with Jordan, but like I said, most of the time, after you miss a few, it gets in your head, and then you really start thinking too much about it.
Oh, you're listening to The Voice. Larry Miller, life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player. He's the author of four books on golf and performance, simply the best. Ben Hogan's Secret Fundamental is his latest release, What He Never Told the World. And okay, so we have highlighted and talked about tonight Jordan Spieth. What about Tiger? I know he's so grateful to return to the Open. Always the expectations seem to be so high. But is he truly, really ready for this test of golf?
I think so. It's not especially long course in terms of needing to bomb the driver down there. And I think that's increases your odds of hitting the ball in the fairway. In fact, I was surprised to see Jordan Spieth hitting so many drivers in that first round,
okay,
when he really didn't have to, and getting himself in trouble. So I think, you know, I think Tiger Woods, I picked him from the beginning of the tournament, in this tournament. I thought he had a great chance to win it just for that fact that he can hit irons, some of those driving irons or two or three irons, and keep the ball in play and then let his iron game, his short game, do the scoring for him.
You've spent time, as I understand, what at Carnoustie. What do you think of this brute course, and what comes to mind in preparation for it?
Well, you know, Carnoustie, well, we've talked about this before, but it's a different game over there. You know, it's not a game where you throw darts and fly the ball, you know, at the flag and stick it right there. It's more of a, you know, run the ball up, let it bounce up, and you have to really know the terrain. I think these guys spent a lot of time studying the terrain of the golf course to know how the ball is going to react when they hit those long, you know, pitch and runs and hit those shots that run up to the green. You have to kind of know how it's going to you know, bounce and roll. Carnoustie is playing very firm and fast. You've already seen it. You're going to see a lot of shots that land 20, 30 yards short of the green and bound on up to the green and bounce around. So you have to do your homework there on these holes. If they get some weather and some rain or something, then it might soften up a bit. You can start flying those approaches at the flag. But Carnoustie is an interesting course. When I played it three times.
Okay.
And the first four or five holes are pretty benign. And, you know, you go along. First time you play it, after four or five holes, you say, gee, there's not that much to this course. Yeah, it's not that bad. And, boy, all of a sudden it just punches you right in the nose. After the fifth hole, it gets extremely difficult, and that difficulty builds, culminates, you know, on 17 and 18 with really tough finishing holes.
Hey, Larry Miller with us inside the ropes, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, doing an overview tonight of the Open. And so, you know, when you're going into a major tournament, what is the mindset in terms of, is this just another golf tournament? Because you don't want to psych yourself out.
You don't want to, you know, put pressure on yourself and unnecessarily. And you do want to just try to stay your same routine and don't do anything different. But obviously everybody knows the importance of a major. It can really cement your legacy in the game when you can call yourself a major winner, even if it's only one. So it is extremely important to a career. And then, of course, the other thing right now is that a lot of these players are vying for the Ryder Cup positions, you know, and making that team. So as you go on into the, not just because it's a major, but getting on into the year, to the latter part of the schedule, it becomes, each tournament becomes that much more important, because if you're on the bubble for the Ryder Cup team, then it becomes extremely important and you have to perform well. But still, you know, you just have to not do anything different. That's the biggest thing, is to stick to your normal routine, so that, because when you get out of your routine, that's when you get unnecessary pressure placed on yourself and start thinking about the importance of the tournament. So, you know, just want to get out there and try to keep the ball in the fairway. And then, you know, let your short game, as I said, do the scoring. That's where it's at. And but the biggest thing in a major is to not make doubles, because it's harder to make birdies in a major. And so you want to be play smart and at all costs try not to make doubles or worse, because that's what really costs you golf tournaments, is when you start making big numbers.
What are your thoughts about the bunkers over there and how difficult it is to get out of a bunker?
Oh. Well, you've already seen it here in the first two rounds, where players have to play sideways out of the bunker. Some of the walls of those bunkers are seven, eight, 9 feet high, and if your shot lands close enough to the to that back, you know, the wall, you have to play out sideways because you can't get it up in the air fast enough to clear it. And so you got to avoid those things. You have to know where they are, first of all, because a lot of them are hidden. You can't see them from the fairway. You have to really have a map of that golf course that you do that in the practice rounds, and you at all costs you want to avoid those big deep bunkers, because that's how you get those doubles and triples, because some of them you have to play sideways and some you can't even get out, so without going backwards, and so you want to stay out of those at all costs. And a lot of times, you know, at Carnoustie, you're going to see a lot of players they're going to play away from the flag sticks. They're not going to go at flags that if you move by a little bit, you're going to end up in a pot bunker or bunker. So you're going to see a lot of guys play in the middle of the green, taking their two-putt par and moving on and try to score on the – there's only two par fives at Carnoustie.
Wow.
So there's not a lot of opportunities. You know, most tour courses have four par fives. And for these guys, they hit it so far, that's four birdie opportunities, you know, really strong birdie possibilities. And there's only two at Carnoustie, and they're not easy. So the par fours are really important. You got to stay away from the doubles and limit your mistakes to bogeys.
Larry Miller with us each and every week, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, always doing a great job providing all the important elements in order to succeed and in order to win. You did a great job tonight helping us construct a game plan and how these guys are going to try to come out on top. One quick player, got about 15 seconds, Francisco Molinari. What is going on with his game right now? He has just been so hot.
He's considered right now the best ball striker on the tour. The guy is a machine from tee to green. It's all about the putter. He gets a hot putter, he's really, really hard to beat because he's hitting more greens in regulation than anybody. And he's another guy. I think I picked, along with Woods, I picked him as one of my pre-tournament favorites just because of his precise ball striking. He's gonna stay away from those pot bunkers, and he's going to make a lot of pars. And if he can drop some putts, he's going to be right there at the end.
Well, Larry, enjoy the Open Championship this weekend, and we look forward to – actually, we'll be off next week. We'll be in Pinehurst, so we look forward to reconvening in the first week of August. I can't believe it.
I know. Golf season is just – it seems like it just started.
Yeah, it's just
blowing
up.
There it is, you know. But we got a lot of excitement yet to come. We got this major, the PGA, the Ryder Cup, the FedEx – you know, tournaments. So there's a lot of great drama coming up in the months to come. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all of you tuning in tonight, enjoy the 2018 Open Championship. We'll be back with much more after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back. It is Friday night, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, the next generation of sports radio. Before we get underway and do a recap on NBA Summer League, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. They are close, convenient. They are known for their guaranteed everyday low price. Stop by your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store today. O'Reilly's, better parts, better prices every day. Well, as promised, it is time to talk some NBA news and notes. We're going to recap free agency and talk some NBA Summer League. 30 teams, 12 days. It is hard to believe it's already in the books. And delighted to have with us for the very first time from DraftKings, their NBA analyst, and that is Julian Edlow. Good evening, Julian.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. Well, NBA Summer League, it is all about the rookies, so we want your analysis. Who was the most impressive rookie from the 2018 class?
Yeah, well, this was actually a really nice showing for the rookie class in Summer League. I actually wrote an article on Thursday that you can find on the DraftKings playbook, kind of breaking down a good portion of the rookies that stood out. But I'll go with more of a sleeper here rather than one of those top 10 guys or a lottery pick. I really thought that Mitchell Robinson of the Knicks, who went in the second round, he was kind of a question mark because he was unable to play in college. He was spectacular in Summer League. He averaged 13 points per game, over 10 rebounds per game, 4 blocks per game. He showed such versatility on the defensive end and really proved that he knew how to play when he was one of the biggest question marks coming into this draft class. I think if teams had the ability to watch him play that Summer League, prior to the draft, I really feel that Mitchell Robinson would have been a top 10 pick.
Okay, I know you're in Boston, but I got to talk to you. I'm a proud Sooner. So to talk to us about, as far as down here in the Big 12 Conference, I mean, what does the future hold for Trae Young? He was named All-NBA Summer League second team.
Yeah, well, so he was pretty inconsistent in Summer League, and that's something we could expect maybe for a smaller guard getting his first taste of the NBA, whether it be the real deal or Summer League. Obviously, he's a really smart player. He knows how to play the game, and it's really going to come down to how hard he works in the NBA. That shot, we saw him get going in Summer League. I forget exactly what he went for in his first game. I think it was something like 2-for-12 from the field. His game is going to come down to his ability to shoot in the NBA, and we know that's something he can do, but is he going to be able to do it consistently over bigger defenders? From what I've seen from Trae Young, he's an underrated passer. He obviously really knows how to pass the ball. And he's going to have to prove that in the NBA as well as, you know, shoot the lights out like he did in college to really make a mark. But the good thing for Young is mm-hmm. the Atlanta Hawks really have no firepower. So he's kind of going to be given the keys to the offense and be able to learn on a really quick curve, I think, in Atlanta.
You know, Julian, were you concerned about his slow start? Because you were talking about how inconsistent he was. And, you know, truly, the final verdict on this, you know, we won't know for years to come how this is all going to play out, right?
Yeah, obviously it's going to take, you know, 3 to 5 years to figure out exactly what Trae Young is. And that's kind of the case with all these freshmen that come out and go into the NBA draft. But he obviously has some pedigree coming from college, what he was able to do in that freshman season with Oklahoma. But we've got to give him time to develop, obviously. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, I think that him being kind of the main guy in Atlanta, assuming they are able to move Dennis Schroeder before the season starts, is that we might be able to know a little bit earlier on Young if he's the real deal or not, because he's going to be asked to do so much. Now, that said, the downside to the same thing is he's not going to have much help, so that might make him look a little bit worse at times. So it's going to be tough to tell exactly what he is right off the bat, but he's certainly going to be getting the minutes and the opportunities to learn the NBA.
Okay, he's got the offensive skill set. What about on the defensive end? What did he show you?
Yeah, what he's shown is that he's willing to try. He's going to go out there and give full effort, kind of like Isaiah Thomas has over the last few years, and him becoming a star in the NBA. The problem is when you're that size, sometimes that effort just isn't enough because of the type of size that there is competing against him in the NBA. So I don't want to knock Trae Young for effort or defensive ability. It's just there's a reason that these smaller guards can sometimes slip even when they're so talented, and it's because sometimes the size matchups in the NBA, there's just no way you can get around them.
You're listening to The Voice, DraftKings NBA analyst, that is Julian Edlow, joining us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. You can connect with Julian at Twitter, at Julian Edlow. And, of course, we're breaking down all the rookies who we are most eager to see in 2018. And, Julian, yep, we're here in the state of Texas. We love the Dallas Mavericks, and we would love to get your analysis on Luka. What does he bring, and what does he show you? Because there's a lot of optimism about this young man and that he is a playmaker.
Yeah, so, I mean, I mentioned Mitchell Robinson off the top with the Knicks being maybe the biggest question mark in this draft. Luka Doncic carried that tag to a degree as well. Obviously, he was the number three pick overall. He was going to go high in this draft regardless because, you know, we've got some film on him playing highly competitive professional basketball overseas since a young age. So I think that it's a very safe assumption what a lot of scouts went with heading into this draft, that Doncic probably has the highest floor in this draft class. He's 19 years old. He was the MVP of that finals over there in Europe. He just is a complete player that knows how to compete at a professional level. We were just talking about the lack of size with Trae Young. Mm-hmm. Doncic, 6'8", he has the NBA size, and what he lacks in athleticism, he makes up for with his skill set and his shooting ability. So I think that Doncic has a lot of promise. You got to love that big floor. And then Dallas feels like just the perfect landing spot for him as well. He can play in that backcourt, kind of be behind Dennis Smith Jr., who will be in that lead guard position, take some of the pressure off of him as another young star that's expected to succeed with that team. And then what better guy to learn from than Dirk? 20 years in the league, another European mystery man coming into the draft that turned into, you know, one of the greats of the game. So you couldn't ask for a better mentor for Luka Doncic in that sense.
Are you, Julian, are you optimistic about Dallas?
I am kind of optimistic about Dallas. They're kind of a wild card in this NBA season, and I wouldn't really want to put any expectations on them with the way that the Western Conference has kind of unraveled this offseason. It's going to be almost impossible for them to make the playoffs when you look at the other teams in that conference, but I think it's going to be a good developing year for them, just in the sense of watching Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. grow. They brought DeAndre Jordan in, obviously, to compete. So at some point, they feel like during DeAndre Jordan's contract, or if they're able to extend him on his contract, that they're going to be able to compete or land another free agent or something in the near future. So I think you want to kind of keep expectations low this season only because of the conference, but at the same time, when you watch the team, you want to see them growing, and I think they're going to be heading in the right direction.
We are so glad you're with us on this Friday night. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Connect with us many different ways at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. You can go back and listen to our exclusive interview with DraftKings NBA analyst Julian Edlow at podcastarena.com. You can always email the show at info@eradiosports.com. Okay, so Julian, let's move ahead. We've talked about, hit on just briefly on Summer League and how it all played out, but the blockbuster trade between San Antonio and Toronto with DeMar DeRozan and Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi is headed north of the border. Why do you think there was so much apprehension on both parties' part?
Yeah, it was as interesting a trade as we can remember, just because Kawhi Leonard has sat out essentially a full season of his prime. Who knows what the injury was really like last season. Now he doesn't want to go to Toronto, according to, you know, most reports. But this is a deal that had to happen. Kawhi Leonard had to get out of San Antonio, and the Spurs, you know, made the choice that they thought was best for them. So in that sense, it was a good deal. And I do like the move for the Raptors, just because it was clear that what they had wasn't going to get out of the Eastern Conference, especially with the 76ers and the Celtics only expected to be getting better. So rather than, you know, blow things up and hit the reset button, I'm a believer that Kawhi Leonard is probably the third best player in the NBA when healthy, behind LeBron James and Kevin Durant. So see if he can put you over the top, if he can give you his all in the Eastern Conference, and maybe that gets you somewhere. From the Spurs' perspective, they're not getting those young pieces either. They bring in DeMar DeRozan, who, even if you don't like the contract, he's still going to help the Spurs be a playoff team in the Western Conference. They got to the playoffs without Kawhi Leonard last season, so having LaMarcus Aldridge and DeMar DeRozan there, still got Gasol, you've got Rudy Gay, and DeJounte Murray, I think, is one of the nicer young point guard pieces in the NBA, so they're still going to be in a pretty good spot next season. So I do think trade is mostly a win-win.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Julian, you know, DeMar DeRozan, he was very vocal about his displeasure about how this all went down, and, you know, really, you know, reference talking about there's no loyalty in the NBA. Why do players think they are untradeable? I mean, this is a business.
Yeah, it is a business, and I think we've seen over the last few years both parties really, really take control. We've seen DeMar DeRozan, a lifelong Raptor who wants to be there, get traded. We kind of saw the same thing with the Clippers offer, giving Blake Griffin that huge contract, then sending him to Detroit. Isaiah Thomas has been vocal that he thought he was a piece in Boston and was shipped off in that Kyrie Irving trade. So as much as we've seen from that side, we've also seen the players, you know, really deciding what they want to do for themselves in free agency. All these super teams, LeBron doing the 1+1 contracts for the most part every summer, although now he actually committed to the Lakers. So I think the players and the teams have really been looking out for what's best for themselves. And like you said, that's a business. So when a decision is in a player's hand, they should be looking out for themselves. And when the Raptors have the ability to trade for a guy, like I just said, that I think is a top three player in the NBA, then you got to do what you got to do and send DeMar DeRozan packing.
Hey, just a few more minutes. DraftKings NBA analyst. He's bringing his good stuff. That is Julian Edlow with us tonight at SB Nation Radio. As we talk about San Antonio, LaMarcus Aldridge, is he going to be a better player next year because he will be, he's going to be the main guy on the Spurs team?
I think that he'll probably be a more efficient player. Obviously, coming from the fantasy side of things with DraftKings, last season, LaMarcus Aldridge averaged the most points, rebounds, and assists that he has in any of his 3 years with the Spurs. So he hasn't had a season that good since his Portland days. I don't expect that to happen again because, as I mentioned, Kawhi Leonard played 9 games last year. So that was really his team with nobody else there. Now it's he and DeMar DeRozan's team for the most part, and DeRozan mostly known for his scoring. So I could see Aldridge maybe being a little less involved. He can now kind of share those shots. It's hard when your best player in the NBA is kind of a pure post player or high post player.
Mm-hmm.
So this will give them a different way to get shots off at the end of games if they want to go to the perimeter with DeRozan. So I think it'll kind of ease some of the stress, and this can maybe make both DeRozan and Aldridge kind of play a little bit more into their game next season and be a little bit more efficient.
Okay, our NBA news and notes will continue with DraftKings NBA analyst Julian Edlow after this quick commercial break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show in hour number two. Right now we're going to rejoin Julian Edlow, DraftKings NBA analyst. Hey, Julian Edlow has been with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show, DraftKings NBA analyst. And, you know, I think about just this whole trade, DeMar DeRozan and Kawhi Leonard. You know, San Antonio and Toronto, I mean, both these cities, great basketball cities. I mean, it's the main show. It's the main gig in town. And, you know, the fans really embrace you. I think both of these players, perhaps they might be a little bit surprised on how, you know, they get comfortable within their new destinations.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. For the most part in the NBA, when a player is sent somewhere that they don't want to be, there are examples where that player has been right. But you look back at a lot of examples, the most recent one, Paul George getting traded to Oklahoma City, every indication was that he wanted to end up in Los Angeles.
Right.
And now he's right back there on that long-term deal.
Good point.
Playing with Russell Westbrook. And you can go back another 10 years with that. When Kevin Garnett didn't want to get traded to Boston, he nixed that trade plenty of times, then came on board, and now, you know, he's a legend in Boston, and he loves coming back here and you know, being in that building and experiencing being a part of the Celtics. So there's plenty of examples, and that's another reason why Toronto did this deal. they didn't only get the better player, but they are going to have the opportunity to convince Kawhi Leonard that Toronto is a great basketball city, a place that he can win, stay out of the Western Conference, which is crazy right now, and try to defend in the East.
Yeah. Hey, are you surprised the Lakers didn't make an aggressive push for Kawhi? And, you know, maybe eliminate some of these younger players on the roster, shave some of them off. And you got, like, as you're saying, a top three player. Some folks think that, you know, Kawhi Leonard, he is a top five player within the league.
Yeah, it's a tough call if you're the Lakers. Just because Kawhi was so vocal that, or Kawhi, he wasn't vocal, but reports were that he wants to be in Los Angeles. So that makes it kind of tougher to pull the trigger on giving up all of those assets when you think you have a good chance to land him in free agency. Or maybe things go south now in Toronto and Kawhi doesn't like it there and the Raptors say, well, there's no reason to lose him in free agency. Let's see if the Lakers want to add him in February. So there are some different ways that this could go. I think that the Lakers probably now seeing him in Toronto maybe should have made a more aggressive push, but it's a really tough call to give up those when somebody's telling you that they want to be there.
Mm-hmm. Hey, there's been a lot to digest over free agency. It's been great to catch up and have on the program for the first time. That is Julian Edlow. Give him a follow at Twitter, Julian Edlow. And, of course, DraftKings NBA analyst does a great job. Hey, Julian, thanks so much for joining us on this Friday.
Thanks for having me on.
That, of course, was DraftKings NBA analyst Julian Edlow joining us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Give him a follow at Twitter, at Julian Edlow. And a very special thank you to all of our amazing guests. Of course, as a reminder, we'll be off next week, but we'll see you the first week in August and ready to talk the 2018 college football season and get you ready. Have a great weekend. Don't drink and drive.
At Market District, we believe in the power of great taste. So here's a little taste of all the delicious possibilities. Juicy, hand-picked heirloom tomatoes. Seared certified Angus steak over aged cheddar mashed potatoes. Or how about fresh dough stretched by hand for every house-made pizza? Is your mouth watering yet? From produce to meats to chef-made meals, discover great taste at Market District.